World News Today, brought to you by Admiral Corporation, world's largest manufacturer of radio phonographs with automatic record changers. This program is presented in behalf of Admiral dealers all over America. By shortwave broadcast direct from important overseas stations and leading news centers in our own country, CBS reporters are waiting to bring you first-hand news from the world's political and battlefronts. Now, here's Douglas Edwards.
American Third Army troops are reported inside the city of Koblenz today, and the First Army bridgehead across the Rhine has been expanded by almost a mile. Supreme Headquarters says American forces have driven to high ground beyond the crossing point at Remagen. The bridgehead area is under German artillery fire. Berlin says American troops have made another crossing of the Rhine 10 miles north of Remagen, and that those units have joined with the main bridgehead, but there's no confirmation. In the air war, German submarine yards at Bremen, Hamburg, and Kiel, and oil refineries were hit today by 2,000 planes of the American 8th Air Force. There are reports the Russians are fighting in the southern suburbs of Danzig and in the streets of Ostdam, 4 miles east of Stettin. The Germans say heavy fighting is going on inside Kustrin on the central front before Berlin. In the Pacific, the Iwo Jima battle is still going on, and Tokyo Radio continues to claim the Americans have landed on Mindanao in the Philippines. And now we switch you to a Columbia correspondent overseas. For more news of the fighting in Western Europe, Admiral takes you to Supreme Headquarters in Paris, Bill Shadell reporting.
After the last few days of thrilling events, today's news of the Western Front might be considered somewhat of an anticlimax, and recognized as such by Supreme Headquarters in its news conference this afternoon. Mopping up operations along the west bank of the Rhine are continuing. Our bridgehead across the Rhine is being strengthened. But these are time-consuming operations, operations which may scarcely be pinpointed on a map or marked by any large German cities. Across the Rhine, our positions are being improved despite enemy artillery, which is noticeably heavier. Our bridgehead, as well as the bridge that made it possible, is still within reach of that artillery, although the enemy has now been deprived of direct observation. At the request of First Army, no points of identification which might indicate width or depth or present lines are being announced officially, but we are told of an uninterrupted flow of men, tanks, and ammunition onto the east bank, which is satisfactory news in itself. As to anything further, Chafe justifiably throws out a certain cautious note to quell any speculation on an immediate exploitation or a sensational breakout from this bridgehead. There is still considerable work to be done in this side of the Rhine. While the sole remaining German hold of any size west of the Rhine from Remagen on north has now been written off by the Canadian Army, there's the pocket below the Remagen crossing containing an estimated 23,000 Germans. These are offering only slight resistance, but the matter of going in and getting them is slowed by roadblocks and the terrain itself. Just south of this pocket, there is still another patch of German-held ground on the north banks of the Moselle yet to be cleared. Meanwhile, our Air Force continues to soften up the Ruhr industrial area and isolate a forthcoming great battlefield. Our Ninth Air Force contributed 750 sorties to this job this morning, while 1,200 heavies of the 8th Air Force were pummeling German submarine construction and oil refineries in Bremen, Hamburg, and Kiel. This is Bill Shadell at Supreme Headquarters, returning you now to Admiral in New York.
And for news of the air war and what's what with the German Army, Admiral takes you now to London, Larry Lesser reporting.
The American Air Force returned to Hamburg today. The devastated German port, as well as Bremen and Kiel, was battered by more than 1,200 liberators and fortresses, escorted by 700 American fighters. And Western Germany may not have been free of our bombers either. This afternoon, we could hear the German radio reporting new bomber formations over the Reich, but I haven't seen anything official on it yet. Today was Heroes Day in Germany. Field Marshal Göring, Marshal Keitel, German Chief of Staff, Admiral Dönitz, and General Gutberg, head of the SS, placed a wreath from Hitler on the war memorial in Berlin's Unter den Linden. And a manifesto from Hitler was read over the German radio. Hitler said nothing new. His statement covered the old ground of injustices at Versailles. Germany as the defender of Europe against international Jewry Bolshevism and Anglo-American capitalism. But Hitler implied that it was still in the power of the German soldiers to make the price of victory too expensive for the Allies in terms of lives and equipment. London interprets Hitler's statement as an appeal to the Germans to go down fighting for the sake of tradition, so that future generations of Germans will be inspired to try it again. With the Rhine's west bank secured, Britain expects other crossings of Germany's River of Destiny, after a lull to build up our own strength. And after that, the end of the European war should not be far off. But before then, Britain expects another bloodbath in the ranks of the German army. It's now recognized in London that the German army has become a party army controlled by the Nazis. In imitation of the Russians, the Nazi party has appointed political commissars, one to each division of the German army, and he has Nazi assistants keeping watch over German army formations down to the size of companies. The purpose of this is to keep a check on German army officers who might be willing to surrender their units. And we know here that even though von Rundstedt commands all the armed forces in the West, a check is kept on him too. Von Rundstedt must report to Himmler, and all of von Rundstedt's chief officers must report to Himmler too. A double check, even on the commander-in-chief. And this is Larry Lesser in London, returning you now to Admiral in New York.
More news in just a moment, but first here is Warren Sweeney with a message from Admiral.
If you like beautiful furniture, your Admiral dealer is going to get an easy order from you for your post-war Admiral radio phonograph with an automatic record changer. Admiral cabinets will have everything. They'll be beautiful in style and design. From the lowest price table model to the finest radio phonograph, the traditional beauty of Admiral cabinets will give just the tasteful charm that you want in your home. There'll be modern designs in plastics and wood. There'll be authentic period reproductions to match your particular furniture styling. And they'll all be built in true Admiral fashion of the best available materials. In these exquisitely beautiful cabinets, you'll be getting the high-fidelity performance of Admiral radio, plus the trouble-free operation of the Admiral automatic record changer. All things considered, for your next radio phonograph, you'll undoubtedly choose Admiral, America's smart set. Now, here once again is Douglas Edwards.
Red Army forces are reported battling in the southern suburbs of Danzig today and in the streets of Altdorf, which is 4 miles east of Stettin. And before Berlin, the Germans say fierce fighting rages inside the older fortress city of Kustrin. The 2nd White Russian Army swept across the Nogat River to capture a town 20 miles from Danzig, while the central units drove toward the city's inner defenses. Frontside dispatches say the 1st Army, the 1st Russian Army, whose upper wing was battling along the approaches to Stettin, has reached its starting point for an all-out offensive on Berlin. These reports are not officially confirmed in Moscow. A German military commentator, declaring the heaviest battles are ahead, admits that Marshal Zhukov's forces are massing on the Oder for the thrust at the barricaded capital. Patrol action continues on the Italian front, and for a direct report from Italy, Admiral takes you now to CBS Rome, Farnsworth Fowle reporting.
Today's air activity was marked by a new development. For the first time, medium bombers were sent across the frontier into Austria. Heretofore, this had been the hunting preserve of the heavy bombers, with occasional assistance from long-range fighter bombers. But today, the American B-25s of the 12th Air Force attacked a bridge on the main line between Linz and Klagenfurt. There's nothing very remarkable about this performance. The point they attacked is only 200 miles from our front line in Italy, and the B-25s in the past have gone to targets as much as 500 miles from their bases. But it's interesting as an example of the way in which the Air Force is closing in on the German communication system. There are still plenty of targets for the mediums in northern Italy. Other B-25 formations today were working as usual along the Brenner Pass railway line. But if the Germans ever give up using the railway system of northern Italy, it will mean very little extra trouble for the mediums to follow them back into Austria. These B-25s have won a high reputation for accuracy in their bombing, and if it isn't too long a haul, they carry a bomb load approaching out of the heavies. Early reports show that the fighter bombers have had a good day in northern Italy. Spit bombers attacked German artillery positions on the 8th Army front. P-47s touched off 15 freight cars loaded with ammunition at Kazarsa, west of Udine, and knocked a span out of a bridge near Parma. P-40s, still serving with the RAF, reported two more bridges closed up, at least for the time being. Pope Pius XII addressed representatives of the Catholic labor associations today in a carefully worded statement of trade union policy. He welcomed the merging of the Catholic trade unions with the others into a single confederation of labor, so long as it stays primarily an organization for collective bargaining and is not used to exploit the worker or against the employer as such. The Pope said that socialization is acceptable only in cases where it seems really essential for the common good, and owners should be properly indemnified. Sketching a new social order, a new democratic economy, he said it was threatened equally by the despotism of anonymous capital and by mass forces which might be ready to use their power against justice and the rights of others. This is Francis Fowler in Rome, returning you now to Admiral in New York.
In the Pacific, on Iwo Jima, the Marines are slowly pushing their way through the last Jap defenses. The pressure is telling on the bitterly fighting enemy, who is trying to make our conquest as costly as he possibly can. A 3rd Marine Division patrol, which fought its way onto Iwo's northeastern beach yesterday, reported back to Major General Erskine that they had washed the Japanese stench from their hands in a piercing move that cut the Jap defenders in half. Other spearheads were driven to the Jap-held end of the island, breaking the enemy remnants into ever smaller pockets of resistance. But the Japs are fighting craftily. In some sectors, they apparently are letting the Marines slip through their lines during the daylight, then coming out of their caves and pillboxes to wage night warfare. But the Marines are prepared for this type of fighting and dig in well for the night with strongly established defense perimeters. Flares are installed around their camps so that when the Japs start their infiltration tactics, they can be sighted. There's no lack of supplies, ammunition, food, and water for the frontline Marines, but they're deadly tired from fighting over the rough terrain. And now that the Japanese realize that they're making a last-ditch stand without hope of victory or escape, they're firing more buzz bombs and rockets than ever before. They make an unearthly noise at night, correspondents tell us, and they whistle and groan throughout the day, throwing out smoke and sparks. About 14 of these air bombs landed in the 5th Division area, but they caused no damage. Engineers are working like madmen trying to blow up caves as they follow the combat troops. But it's impossible to find all the enemy hideouts. So cleverly hidden, a man almost has to fall into the opening of one to see it. Garrison troops on Iwo are going to have little spare time on their hands. They'll be busy for months hunting down Japs who choose to hide in caves rather than fight it out in the open and be killed. Well, the Tokyo radio is still telling of fighting on Mindanao. They say today that American tanks and infantry have landed on that island, the second largest in the Philippines, and are fighting for an airfield at Zamboanga on the western tip. General MacArthur still has not confirmed the enemy reports of a new landing. His last communique, however, told of heavy bombing of the base at Zamboanga, which, as would likely precede as an invasion. On Luzon, the American 1st Cavalry Division drove into Antipola, the southern anchor of the heavily defended line east of Manila, while other American forces on the northeastern sector of Luzon have driven through rugged mountain terrain toward Balete Pass. 7 fires are still blazing in the blackened center of Tokyo today, and another in the capital's harbor, 30 hours after the greatest superfortress raid of the war. A reconnaissance crew, which flew over the city today, reports that columns of smoke 7,000 feet high still are spiraling up from the devastated 15-square-mile section in the very heart of the Japanese capital. The Tokyo radio said today that Jap troops of the Shanghai garrison have disarmed 2,000 men of the French Army Police in Shanghai and have seized communication facilities. Allied forces in Burma have been stepping up their campaign recently. And for a summary of the battle situation on the Burma front, here is Columbia's military analyst, Major George Fielding Elliott.
The tremendous military events in Europe and the dramatic storming of Iwo Island have almost caused us to lose sight of the operations in Southeast Asia, where Allied arms are registering remarkable gains. Report has just come in that the commander-in-chief of this area, Admiral Lord Lewis Mountbatten, has just returned after a four-day conference with the Chinese generalissimo, Chiang Kai-shek, and they had plenty of good news to talk about and plans for the future. In Burma, British and Indian troops are fighting in the capital city, Mandalay. Half the city is already in Allied hands. The Japanese are still holding Fort Dufferin, an old fort within the city limits, but this looks very much like another one of those stupid suicide stunts, such as the Japanese Marines pulled off in Manila. It makes no military sense. It just saves what the Japanese call face. More important, however, even than the imminent fall of the Burmese capital, is the operation which immediately preceded the advance to Mandalay. The sudden and brilliant thrust of Lieutenant General Slim's 14th Indian Army across the Irrawaddy River at Pakokku and his advance 30 miles southeast of Mandalay to the road junction of Maitila. This thrust cut the main highway between Mandalay and the great seaport of Rangoon, which is a far more worthwhile military prize than the capital itself. The advance forces of the 14th Army are now fighting to cut the Mandalay-Rangoon Railway as well, which runs some miles east of the highway. Within the arms of the trap thus forged are encircled most of the Japanese troops now in Burma. There does not appear to be any great likelihood that they can fight their way out. If the Japanese troops inside this pocket are destroyed, there will be very few Japanese left to bar the path of General Slim's hard-fighting Tommies and Sepoys to Rangoon. Whether Slim can take Rangoon in the few remaining weeks of good fighting weather before the monsoon sets in remains to be seen, but there is certainly a chance that he can do so. Finally, northeast of Mandalay, another success is chalked up for the British, American, and Chinese troops of the Northern Combat Command. These troops have taken the railhead town of Lashio, terminus of the old Burma Road. And so, in all the Burmese theater, the word is victory. Now here again is Douglas Edwards.
Major Elliott has discussed today the military picture inside Burma. And now for a report on what our capital hears of developments inside Japan, Admiral takes you to CBS Washington, Tris Coffin reporting.
Some big news in Washington is locked up in official secrecy. A series of conferences on the Far East have been taking place behind closed doors. Both military and political problems have been discussed. Within the past week, President Roosevelt has talked to Admiral Nimitz, General Stilwell, former chief of staff in China, Admiral Halsey, and Major General Hurley, our ambassador to China. Also in Washington is Lieutenant General Wedemeyer, the American chief of staff to Generalissimo Chiang Kai-shek. Those officials in Washington directly concerned with the Far East believe that a major Japanese political crisis may blow up within a matter of days. The Japanese Imperial Diet, or legislative body, opened a special session today. Many stories of a wide split in Japan have been leaking back to Washington in recent weeks. According to these reports, two groups are supposed to be fighting for power: the young militarists who want to copy Hitler's Germany, and the great industrial barons who would prefer to call it quits now. The latter are said to be afraid Russia will attack Japan and thus be counted in on the administration of the islands. They see in this the end of their industrial power. The financial and government leaders of Japan are quite aware of the social and economic reforms promised by the Japanese communist Okano. He has formed a Japanese People's Emancipation League in communist China and has been unusually successful in getting Jap soldiers to surrender. These business tycoons are supposed to be joined, according to confidential messages, by a few military leaders who are convinced they are beaten. American experts on Japan here in Washington are frankly skeptical. They do not believe there are enough influential figures in Japan who realize how badly the war is going for Nippon. But I was told today, anything could happen. We do know of a few leading Japanese who want peace, but we are afraid the information we've been getting may have been planted by the Japanese to slow our war effort. I return you to Admiral in New York.
From Columbia correspondents on the Western and Pacific fronts, in New York and in Washington, we've heard how the world's far-flung battles are progressing today. Now let's take a look back and review the developments of the momentous week just past. In Europe, Allied armies were in the second week of their powerful offensive, and they went about the business of cleaning out the Rhineland on the western side of the river north of the Moselle. The armies of the North, under Marshal Montgomery, and the American Ninth Army, accomplished this by staging two great enveloping operations from the North and the South. These two forces closed the trap in the North by joining forces at Geldern. Still farther down the line, in the middle Rhine front, the American 3rd and 1st Armies and the newly created 15th closed another trap on the Germans when 1st Army troops moved south from Cologne and met an arm of the 3rd coming north along the Rhine just above Koblenz. 5 Nazi divisions, some 50,000 troops, were caught in the pocket. The stage was then set for a daring try, and General Hodge's 1st Army took that try. Engineers moved swiftly onto the Rhine Bridge at Remagen, cut the wires to heavy dynamite charges the Germans had set to explode in just 10 minutes. Then our tanks rumbled across, thrust deeper into the enemy territory on the western bank of the river, and the bridgehead had been won. Almost in the twinkling of an eye, those brave men of the 1st had accomplished what military men at Scheif had hoped and prayed might be done, but were almost sure was impossible. They had captured a German bridge, a good one, stretching across Hitler's Rhine. Today, as you've heard, that bridgehead is being widened, deepened, and strengthened. Von Rundstedt is now faced with a difficult situation and now must weaken his northern front and shift the bulk of his forces toward the breakthrough area. The British and Canadian armies in the north, along with the American 9th, may take advantage of that weak spot and crash across the river also. The last enemy bridgehead on the Rhine's east bank has been wiped out at Wesel. The Battle of the Eastern Rhineland is over. A new chapter has already begun, the Battle of the Western Bank. On the Russian front this week, there have been strong indications that Marshal Zhukov has renewed his drive on the Oder River sector directly east of Berlin. The Germans say he has. Moscow says only that the second phase of the winter campaign is underway. From German stories, it seems that the Russians have driven one armored spearhead straight toward Berlin from a foothold previously gained on the west bank of the Oder between Frankfurt and Custrin. To the south, another armored column is hammering at the Oder line to outflank Custrin and straighten the front so as to give Zhukov more elbow room downstream. At the same time, the Russian armies of the north have pounded their way into the outskirts of Stettin, Berlin's port on the Baltic, and the northern anchor of the German defense line. That's the way the front stands today. In the air during the week, the Allies continued to drop tons of destruction on German industry, communications, and German armies. And the big news of the week in the Pacific was made by planes, the Super Forts, America's largest bombers. 300 B-29s flew from bases in the Marianas and made their first 1,000-ton raid on Tokyo. It was mostly a firebomb attack, and it left 15 square miles of the Jap capital a blazing inferno. Smoke and fire came up to a height of 20,000 feet. 2 B-29s failed to return. The Battle of Iwo Jima, about 750 miles to the southeast, moved slowly and bloodily toward a close after 3 weeks of the toughest fight in Marine Corps history, with the Americans whittling down the Japs at the northern tip of the small island. Vice Admiral Turner, the commander of the amphibious forces in that theater, said it won't be long before this thing is over. And this week, the cleanup in the Philippines was underway. General MacArthur's troops were mopping up the Japs on Luzon and other islands, and the Japs say American troops have gone ashore on Mindanao. Headquarters doesn't mention any such landing, but the principal city on Mindanao, Zamboanga, has been bombed all week long. And now to tell you about a remarkable new kind of refrigerator that never has to be defrosted, here's Warren Sweeney with a message from Admiral.
It's true, the huge purified moist cool compartment in a post-war Admiral dual-temp refrigerator will never have to be defrosted. The old-fashioned ice cube compartment with the frost-collecting coils around it will be gone from your Admiral, so you can see there'll be nothing to defrost. You'll be surprised how much more room for food this will make, too, when the top shelf is an unbroken area. Admiral engineers have built the cooling coils of a dual-temp right into the walls of the refrigerator. This produces better refrigeration, plus eliminating the regular, messy job of defrosting. The Admiral is the post-war refrigerator that will have the built-in home freezer, so you may quick freeze your own foods or store frozen foods safely for months. Remember the name, Admiral Dual Temp, the new kind of refrigerator. Dual Temp is the successor to the ordinary mechanical refrigerator. And remember also, only Admiral can build a Dual Temp. Last year, Victory Gardeners produced more than 40% of the nation's fresh vegetables, and they are being asked to meet the same goal in 1945. The end of the war in Europe would make little difference in the nation's fresh food requirements. America must have 18,500,000 Victory Gardeners this year. Make it your duty to have one of them. It's patriotic, you'll save money, it's healthy, and you'll have more fresh food with your own Victory Garden. World News Today is brought to you each Sunday at this hour by Admiral Corporation, makers of Admiral Radio, America's Smart Set, and post-war makers of Admiral Dual-Temp Refrigerators, Admiral Home Freezers, Admiral Electric Ranges. Be sure to listen again next Sunday when Admiral brings you World News Today by shortwave, direct from leading news centers of the world. This is Warren Sweeney speaking coast to coast for the Admiral Corporation. This is CBS, the Columbia Broadcasting System.
The WBBM Air Theater, Wrigley Building, Chicago.